On this episode of Baseball Barbecast, we turn our attention to the American League and preview the five teams with sky-high expectations in the American League East. Can the Tampa Bay Rays get back to the postseason even though they don't have a home stadium? Will the Toronto Blue Jays be good enough to not have their entire season be about Vlad Jr. leaving? Can the Boston Red Sox get back into the postseason? Will the New York Yankees defend their division title? Can the Baltimore Orioles win a playoff game? All that and more on this episode of Baseball Barbecast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbecast, the only baseball podcast in the world who thinks the MLB season should just be a 32-team elimination bracket. I'm Jake Mintz, that's Jordan Schusterman, and if we're so worried about pace of play, let's wrap this thing up by the end of April.
Who are our 31st and 32nd teams?
The
this
winner?
Do we think this is why Manfred wants expansion, is to just turn it into a March Madness-style tournament and say, screw October?
Yeah, by 2032, it'll be the Nashville Guitar Boys and the Poughkeepsie Boats will be the two additional teams. Until then, we can take
Poughkeepsie vying for an expansion. Is that a scoop? That would be, oh my gosh,
first and the only time. But until then, the NPB and KBO winners will be welcome into the 32 team elimination bracket. Thankfully, no, that's not real. That's just a reference to a basketball tournament that is also going on right now. On this episode of Baseball Barbercast, we will preview the division that matters, the American League East.
Interesting. Yeah. This is the division with the teams that people have really strong feelings about.
And the Rays.
Also the Rays. But hey, I have strong feelings about the Rays this year, as you will hear on this episode of Baseball Barbercast. We are recording this on Sunday evening after the tournament bracket was announced for March Madness, but we are here to talk about Danny Jansen and friends and the other teams in the division. As always, we will tell you how they did last season, what they did in the offseason, who's on their team, one big question, key players, and give you our over or under based on, you know, just the consensus over-unders that we could find on the internet. Jake Mintz, we are going in order of the Fangraphs projected records from worst to first, and these ones are fairly bunched together. Get used to it, folks. This is a theme of the American League. American League Central is even more crowded, but we will begin with the American League East as we roll on with our season previews. And let us start with those Rays of Tampa Bay, of St. Petersburg, of Tropicana Field.
No. Perhaps. Not of St. Petersburg, Jordan. In fact, of Tampa. Now, I learned this while I was down there for spring training. The city is Tampa. Okay, it is called Tampa. The Tampa Bay is the body of water. And part of the reason this team is called the Tampa Bay Rays is because they are on the Tampa Bay in St. Petersburg, which is like 30 minutes away. You can't call them the St. Petersburg Rays because why else did we win the Cold War? You know, we can't do that.
Interesting. That is a good point. I didn't see that part in the discourse of the latest Rays Stadium update, which could be a much longer conversation. I think we will condense the latest news so that we can talk about the baseball team.
Should call them the Leningrad Rays. What happened to the Leningrad Rays a year ago? They were fine, man. Like, they were just kind of fine. They didn't suck.
For them, though, I mean, that is kind of disappointing because of how high their standards have been over the last, you know, decade or so.
85.5 was the over under. We both took the over. I was a little low on them, but I still took the over and we were wrong. So they won 80 games. They traded away a couple of big pieces at the deadline, which sunk their second half a little bit, with Isak Paredes going to the Cubs and Randy Arozarena going to the Seattle Mariners. And this winter, though, they stocked the roster back up. Only half joking, because they spent real money on Ha-Sung Kim, the Korean shortstop that was a San Diego Padre. Danny Jansen, who famously played for two teams in one day, kind of, will now play for a third American League East team as he becomes the everyday catcher. They sent Jose Siri to the Mets and Jeffrey Springs to the Ath. Also, the roof of their baseball stadium no longer exists after a series of hurricanes blew it off. Now, just very quickly on that, because it is going to be the theme of the Rays season that crosses over the most into the public consciousness. When I was down there, I did a little lap piece around Tropicana Field. Very bizarre, very eerie. I don't have any insider information on this, but I will say, does not seem like there's a whole lot of effort being put into fixing the place right now. It was pretty quiet. I was there on a weekday. If the plan is to play there for opening day 2026, they're going to have to turn the dial up on the renovations, because the sense around baseball is that is incredibly unlikely as of right now. Now, that could obviously change, but just keep that in mind as the Rays wade through this bizarro year playing at George Steinbrenner Field, the Yankee Spring Training Complex.
Well, and you were there, I believe, a few days before the announcement, which they are intending, based on this deal that fell through with the city to try and build a new ballpark, which they had been slowly announcing in waves of optimism, similar that we had seen in other situations as in Oakland. But in this case, it seemed like we were maybe trending towards a situation where they would get a new ballpark built. Instead, now they are pivoting and saying, no, the city is saying we can't work with this ownership group. And they are at least pitching to, I guess, MLB and I guess the city that they are going to try and renovate it and return it in 2026 to the Trop. As you said, you saw it up close. And because of the situation with the ownership group and some of the other reporting around the level of trust that this ownership group can move forward with any of these plans, again, if this sounds familiar, this is kind of what we were dealing with the A's very recently. I don't know. I don't know what to make of it. I think we can kind of cut this off here in this. I mean, this is a very important story for a lot of reasons. For the purposes of, of this preview, we'll keep the focus on the field. And for the purposes of the 2025 Rays, they're going to be playing at George M. Steinbrenner, and that is going to be interesting in and of itself.
One quick distinction between the Rays and the A's. I don't know if Stu Sternberg, who runs the Rays, is a good owner. He has created a sustainable winner, which is impressive. He has not put butts in seats for a variety of reasons over his tenure. I think when you compare him to John Fisher, I don't think John Fisher is a serious human being. I think Stu Sternberg is a serious human being. I think that he has made mistakes and has pissed off some people he shouldn't have pissed off in the area of St. Petersburg and Pinellas County. I don't think he's a clown, right? I think Fisher is a clown. I think Sternberg genuinely wants to keep the team there, and I don't think Fisher ever did. That is, again, that could change in 10 minutes. Who knows? That, to me, having never spoken to either of these people, but spoken to people around the game, I think is a notable distinction. Fisher totally was a special level of just 100%. Total doof.
And I only bring that up as a comparison in the sense of, like, here we go again with the it's unclear how we are moving forward, not in the overall ownership, stewardship, all those things. So anyway, the point is, we know this year they will be playing at a minor league stadium, a spring training stadium that you attended several games at, and you kind of got the feel for what that's going to look like. The most important part about that is it's outside. And while it is, you know, a nice facility in some respects, and I'm sure they will, as we have heard from the reporting, you know, the Yankees have put a lot of effort and money into making this a realistic major league home for the Rays. You're still in Florida in the summer. That means it's going to be hot and sticky and gross, and it's going to be raining all the time. That is going to influence the experience of this team and the teams that have to go there indisputably. The degree to which, we don't know how exactly it will really impact it, let alone like the park factors and how it in fact literally impacts like the production of the team. But I'm just thinking, I think the biggest concern is more from a logistical standpoint over the course of a long season playing outside in Florida.
Who's on this team though? Behind the dish, it'll be Danny Jansen and Ben Roethlisberger, who exists. Yandy Diaz at first base with his massive biceps coming off something of a down year. Brandon Lau at second base. These are the two vets of this team. I believe two of the only position players on the other side of 30. Junior Caminero at third base. Taylor Walls will be the opening day shortstop until Ha-Sung Kim gets back, about a month in, I think is the projected situation. And then in the outfield, it'll be Johnny DeLuca in center, Christopher Morel in left, Josh Lowe in right with some Richie Palacios mixed in there, Jonathan Aranda, Curtis Meade at DH. The rotation, though, is where this team shines. Shane McClanahan back from Thomas Johnson. Shane Boz back from Thomas Johnson. Drew Rasmussen back from Thomas Johnson. That trio of pitchers who missed a big chunk or all of 2024 being in the rotation together at the same time is a big deal. They'll be joined by Taj Bradley, Ryan Pepiot, and Zach Littell. The bullpen, Pete Fairbanks' eyes are very wide, and then it's just, you know, it's the Rays. Like, they're going to have dudes you've never heard of before striking out your favorite players. But the big question you mentioned is what impact playing in a minor league stadium has on their win-loss record.
Yeah, and, you know, the first thing you think of is, okay, how is this going to be a different run-scoring environment? This has been a question with where the A's will be playing in Sacramento and how that ballpark will play. This is one where we do have a level of sample size, and just the dimensions are notable because it's the Yankee Stadium dimensions. And so because of that, you have players like Brandon Lau, and I'm sure Josh Lowe, and I'm sure who else is a left-handed hitter on this team? Not real. I guess Aranda, right? Jonathan Aranda is the other big one that definitely stands out here that could benefit from a power standpoint of playing, you know, half their games in this ballpark. That is a real thing. The Trop, my understanding is fairly slightly pitcher friendly.
Pretty neutral
over the years. Pretty neutral. It's nothing extreme. If this dramatically impacts, you know, it's not nine left-handed hitters in the lineup. There's probably a version of this team where you'd be like, oh my God, like they're going to lead the league in home runs. They're not built that way, but there are a couple key players there that could benefit, and how that impacts the pitching too, I think we'll see. But to me, it's going to be more about those logistical things. How many doubleheaders do they have to end up playing? How many times are they going to have to do some goofy travel? And this could impact the teams that have to play them as well, where late in the season, it's like, we got to squeeze in a bunch of games in September because we had a bunch rained out in July. That's the stuff. And by the way, like rain delays and stuff like that impacting pitching plans, that's where it gets really messy. The Rays obviously have plenty of pitching depth, but just how you literally cannot plan around some of these things, and that is what is going to be challenging.
I agree with you. However, I think that dynamic is applicable and more applicable to the visiting teams.
Sure.
Yeah. Where the Rays, I think, by the middle of the season will be like, this is bonkers, but we have adjusted to this adversity. While teams going down there will be experiencing it mostly for the first time. I think baseball teams and baseball players at all times are looking for adversity behind every corner, under every rock to find an edge. And I think the Rays have a built-in legitimate edge this year that I think will help them. I think all things considered, moving to the stadium is a long-term negative. Duh, like you don't want to play outside in the summer. I understand why. But I think it will help the 2025 Rays in the short term. They always strike out a lot of guys. If you're playing in a smaller park, that's going to benefit you more than it benefits the opposition. As far as key players go, though, Jordan, who do you got?
I'm going to go with Junior Caminero. We talked about him a lot over the offseason when he had this epic performance in the Dominican Winter League and the singular home run highlight that I look forward to watching for many years to come. But you know, even last year, we were wondering if he was going to kind of break through and be, you know, an everyday player. He ultimately only ends up playing 43 games in the big leagues, and he was above average on the whole, but, you know, the OBP still wasn't great. The power was there. Now it's his time to shine. There's really no question anymore. He is going to be a centerpiece of this lineup. Can he become, if not their best hitter, you know, one of their two or three best hitters as a 21-year-old, right? I mean, he doesn't turn 22 until July. The talent is there for him to make a real impact. And since they decided to turn over some of this roster with guys like Randy and Paredes, this is a big bat that they're clearly counting on as being a future, you know, face of the franchise here. I do have another nomination, but I want to hear yours first.
I'm compelled by Ha-Seong Kim. Mm-hmm. 2-year, $29 million contract. So that's 14 and a half. I believe that's the largest free agent contract ever given to a position player by this franchise. And it got lost in the offseason of big money spending from all these teams, but it's not an insignificant outlay for this organization. And for them to believe in Kim enough to give him 2 years is very compelling to me. Last we saw him healthy, he was a splendid defensive shortstop who wasn't hitting for a whole lot of power. Fascinated to see how he fits into this group once it gets rolling.
Yeah, I would say him as a hitter has been really interesting, right? We've seen about almost four complete seasons of him in the majors. And what's been really impressive about him is like the on-base ability is there. I mean, he's been walking a ton recently. He doesn't strike out a lot, but how much power he's really going to be able to contribute. Ultimately, the reason why he's so important and so exciting is Taylor Walls is one of the worst hitters in baseball. And so now Taylor Walls is also one of the best shortstop defenders, and I recognize that. But if you can get, you know, 90% of Taylor Walls' defense with 170% of his offense or whatever, you're going to be in a much better shape as a position player group, which I really like. The one other player that I really do want to mention is Christopher Morel. Just coming off of that trade that already ages in so many weird ways. It was weird at the time. It's now even weirder because Isai Paredes is already gone from the Cubs. But, you know, now you have this guy, Morel, and it's a classic case of, oh, like if the Rays see something in him, like do they see this big breakout? It seems like he's more likely to kind of pencil in and just be one position. We saw him move around a lot with Chicago and play a lot of positions very poorly. Obviously, the reason they like him is I'm sure they think he can be an impact offensive player. There have been times where he's looked like that, and there have been times where, again, the OBP has just been so bad that it hasn't really been reasonable. So he's going to get a chance here, and I'm excited to see what that looks like for Morel.
Over-under for this team. 81.5.
I'm taking the over. I'm going to pick the team to make the playoffs. This is mostly have to do with a lot of the pitchers that I'm super high on, as much as it is the lineup just being better than they were a year ago, where not only did they have some underperformance, but also some terrible luck in terms of some, you know, runners in scoring position and just some BABIP stuff. So I think this offense is going to be fine, maybe tick up a little bit in their new weird environment. And then I think the pitching is going to be, you know, top 10 staff in baseball across the board. And I'm excited to see Shane McClanahan back. So I'm picking the Rays to make the playoffs.
Hate to agree with you. Actually, I love to agree with you. Usually we agree. And I do agree on this one.
And I should mention, by the way, we're both picking to make the playoffs. Fangraphs has them at 37% playoff odds, projecting them to win 82 games. We're doing them first, so you know Fangraphs hasn't projected to finish last, but it's close enough to where you know they had made the postseason 5 years in a row before last year, and I'm going to trust that they're going to kind of get back into it this year.
Let's move on. Next up, Toronto Blue Jays, who have a projected record of 83-79 with 14% division odds and 41% playoff odds, which is higher than I expected. Their over-under last year was 87.5, which seems quite high in retrospect as they won 74 games. Jake and Jordan took the under. I said I was worried that the window would close without them capitalizing on it, but quote, no way they suck. I think they kind of, they were close, they pretty close to sucking.
They definitely sucked last year. That was a bad team in the second half. But hey, we took the under. I took the under. I was like, you know, I don't think they're going to be that bad. They were very bad. But yes, obviously one of the most disappointing teams of 2024. So how did they react to that, Jake? It was quite the offseason for Jays fans.
Juan Soto, call me. He didn't. He's a Met and not a Jay. Another big free agent, another swing and a miss for Toronto. They did trade for Andrés Giménez at the winter meetings, glove for second baseman from the Guardians. Interesting ad. Signed Anthony Santander, who I believe hit more home runs than Juan Soto last year. So like, who's better?
What, he was third in homers, right?
Santander 44, Soto 41. So like, the Jays seem to have gotten the better player. They also signed Jeff Hoffman to be their closer and Max Scherzer to be their guiding light. But most importantly, they could not extend Vladimir Guerrero Jr. before the self-imposed deadline, and he will almost certainly hit free agency this winter. Who is on this team behind the dish? Alejandro Kirk, the human fist shaped like a potato with bat-to-ball skills from the Lord above. He'll be their everyday guy behind the dish. First base will be Vlad. Second base, Giménez. Shortstop, Bo Bichette. Counting on a big bounce back from him. Bit of a hodgepodge over at the hot corner. I think Ernie Clement will get the majority of the opportunities in the early going. Outfield, Santander in left, George Springer in right, and Dalton Varsho in center. He might be hurt to start the season. I think he had shoulder surgery over the winter, but he'll be back pretty early on. Until then, it'll be Joey Loperfido, who they got in the Yusei Kikuchi deal. DH, Will Wagner, the son of Billy Wagner, which is he Will Wagner Jr.?
That's a good question. I've never seen him called that, even if they are both William Wagner. I don't believe so. I think he's just going by Will.
Because William, Billy Wagner, the Hall of Famer, is William William Edward Wagner, and his son is William James Wagner.
I think not Junior. Doesn't it need to be the full name? I'm not as familiar with
junior
with
experts. Junior. We are people don't junior. So if you could let us know about this situation, that would be great. BaseballBarbacast@gmail.com.
I wish he was, I'll say this. I wish he was Willie Wagner. I think that would be more fun.
Willie Wagner? Maybe the next one will be that. They'll go Billy, Will,
and then
Willie, Bill. Four generations of Wagners.
Oh, all right. I kind of like that. All right. There you
starting
go.
Starting rotation.
Wagner family. Make it happen.
Yeah. Send us an email, Wagner family. The rotation. Kevin Gausman, who is on the precipice of declining in an unsavory fashion, still pretty good. Still a good pitcher. But I think he's going to be 34. And some of the peripherals were a little eyebrow raising last year. He'll lead the line. Jose Berríos, you see, now you're looking at the Gausman peripherals for the first time, Jordan.
Strikeout percentage down. See? 10%. Oh, jeez. Yeah. Percentage points, not 10%. He went from 31% strikeout rate to 21%. Uh-oh. Oh, see, boy.
That was a great example of, like, I said a thing, and in your mind, you're like, is Jake talking out of his tush, or is he right about this? Both are possible.
For sure. For sure.
For sure.
Sometimes when Jake makes a claim on the pod, especially if you're watching on YouTube, you'll see me look it up and be like, he's wrong. This was one where I was like, oh God.
Oh man.
He's even more right than I thought.
Behind Gausman is Jose Berríos, Chris Bassett, Max Scherzer, Bowden Francis, and Yariel Rodriguez. Relief pitching, Jeff Hoffman, Chad Green, Jimmy Garcia, even though it's Y-I-M-I, it is Jimmy, I believe, and Nick Sandlin. That bullpen was the second worst in baseball last year, better than the Rockies.
Rockies.
One big question for this team. Besides Vlad, who's awesome, is there anything excellent here?
Yeah, right. So, like, I guess if you just copy and pasted Jeff Hoffman over the last couple of years, like, he's been one of the best relievers in baseball.
Jeff Hoffman is excellent.
If he can do that, that's a lot to ask for him to replicate that in the capital C closer role, but, like, that is possible. And you could say that if Anthony Santander hits 45 home runs again, like, that's an excellent thing to have in the middle of your lineup.
Sure.
Andrés Giménez's defense and Dalton Varsho's defense, those things are excellent. Andrés Giménez is maybe the best. I know he's a weird situation because he's not a shortstop, and so it feels weird to say this, but talk to people in baseball and they will tell you, yeah, he's the best infielder in the league. So, like, that is a kind of a strange profile there. Varsho, of course, an outstanding defensive center fielder, but I'm with you. I think there are... There's reasons they improved enough of their roster in the places that they set out to do. No, they did not land the Soto or the Sasaki, even though it felt like they got close. They had to fix the bullpen. They get Jeff Hoffman. They had to add another starter. They get Max Scherzer. They had to add power. They get the guy who had the third most home runs in baseball last year. So at the end of the day, they did accomplish a lot, but I'm with you. In this division, you would like to have more clearly elite things, and I don't know how many of those things are here.
I'm going to say Jeff Hoffman is my key player because he has been elite as a reliever, and their bullpen was so dreadful in 2024. They lost so many games because of that bullpen. So if you copy and paste last year with Jeff Hoffman, I mean, you could see them winning four more games just because that's where you lose games is late in them. When they're close. So yeah, I think Jeff Hoffman's really important for them, but the key player for them, and there's really no debate, is it's Bo Bichette.
Yeah. Yeah. He's one of the most interesting players in this entire season as someone who was also entering the last year of his contract. I mean, he was as steady as it gets, right? The 3 years before this past year, you knew exactly what you were getting. He was going to be hitting. He was going to hit 300. He was going to give you six extra base hits. He was going to play shortstop basically every day. And then last year was just a disaster. You can say it was all injuries, and every time he came back, he got hurt again. But he was horrible. It was a totally lost season. Does that mean we think that Bobichet forgot how to hit? No, he's still, he just turned 27. But the, I mean, talk about a range of what this guy could be. Because if we had this conversation a year ago, we're talking about him. We were talking about for a while. It was like, who'd you rather have? Bo or Vlad? Bo's the shortstop. He's hitting 300 every year. One of the most gifted hitters in the league. And now if he has another even down season, even if he's, you know, average, the difference in what he's going to be getting in free agency versus what we thought he was heading towards is, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. So it is important in the context of the Blue Jays, and it is, of course, important in the context of him in this point in his career.
He was sixth in war amongst shortstops between 21 and 23. Like, one of the best shortstops in the game, like, flat out, full stop. And it was just, there was nothing redeemable about his 2024. Like, zero, zilch. He was hurt and awful when he was playing. Yep. If he's an all-star level player, he is something excellent about this team and a legitimate second option alongside Vlad, third option maybe alongside Santander. We'll see how things go. I think we'll get something between 2024 and 2023, Bo. I think he'll be just fine. And that brings us to the over-under, 78.5.
So I think it's instructive in this division, and of course, when we get to the end, we'll kind of run through where we think this is going. The bottom fell out for Toronto last year. They were in last place with 74 wins. 78.5, if I'm saying over, they could still finish last, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's, man, but this is another one where if it's going bad, you know, they might have to say, they might have to pull the plug. Now, that's probably also going to depend on how comfortable Ross Atkins feels about his job, right? If he feels like, okay, we're 15 games out in July, it's time to trade Vlad, we have to do it. It's just this, that's the thing to do. And then obviously you're just in a very dark place as a franchise. All of that is to say, I am going to go slight under here. I think that they will not be an embarrassment, but I also think that the division as a whole will be better. Remember, last year you had the Red Sox being 500, you had the Rays being as disappointing as they've been in years. I think that they are going to be in last, and I think it's going to be between 75 and 78 wins.
I too will take the under, but I am more pessimistic than Jordan. The Toronto Blue Jays, to be successful this season, have so many ifs. There are so many players in situations where you look at it and you say, well, you know, if that happens, like, that could be, he could be good. If Max Scherzer still has the good stuff, if Gausman fends off the aging curve, if what Bowden Francis did last year was real, if Jeff Hoffman steps into that role, if Anthony Santander can replicate a 44 homer season, if Bichette bounces back, like, there's so many ifs here. And the things that I feel confident about are Vlad hitting, and the defense is going to be really good. And I just don't think that's enough. So I'll take the under, but I think in a division here where everything's so crunched, this is the team I feel the most confident will not win the division.
That's honestly a fair way to put it as we go big picture. The last thing I'll say about this is really why I'm going under. I actually like the depth that they've assembled on the offensive side of things. Guys like, we're going to see my man Alan Roden's going to be in the big leagues. He's going to make a difference. They still have a Relvis. Like, there's pieces. Does not exist on the mound. And I could just see it being a really slippery slope with one injury, even one injury to one of these starters. And I still don't believe in the bullpen being that much better. It's asking so much of Hoffman to repeat what he has been that, sure, even if it's not as bad as last year, I don't think it's going to be a strength. And that alone, I think, is going to put them in a pretty precarious position. They just don't have the depth on the mound that I believe in. And that's why I think they are going to ultimately go slightly under and probably finish last. Jake, let's take a break. When we return, it's time to talk about your Baltimore Orioles. We'll be right back.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. I was recently talking to a high-ranking member of a baseball front office about fandom and losing that fandom as we wade deeper and deeper into being professionals within the game. Now, I obviously grew up a big Baltimore Orioles fan, and that fandom has stayed with me in some regards as I have become what I am today. But this person, without knowing that about me, said, yeah, you know, I wouldn't insult you by saying that you've kept any of your fandom. And I was like, yeah, freaking totally, dude.
Yeah, I think, you know, we certainly occupy, this is an interesting conversation that I think we've had in bits and pieces about our place in baseball media and how we have gotten there. And I think part of it is why we got to where we are and what makes us who we are. And I think that's fine. And I think we are constantly balancing that. Again, we're keeping it real. So yeah, the Orioles, it's not the same thing as it was. And yet it'd be silly to pretend like you didn't get a little bit extra bummed out when they are doing things like not winning a game in the postseason each of the last 2 years.
It's the team I care the most about. I care less than I used to. Both of those things could be true. I think Amen. That when you're working the way we are, and there are teams that like we care about, you're almost tougher on them in a way. Oh, yeah. Like I imagine, like this is how my dad was in Little League, right? It doesn't work as a pro bias, right? It's like you're almost looking at it with an extra level of scrutiny. And like behind me at my desk, if you're watching on YouTube, like there are more Orioles related bric-a-brac. Yeah. Than any other team. And when they win the World Series, I will cry one little tear for my extended family members and my grandfather who made me care about this team. And then I will write 2,000 words on the vanquished Milwaukee Brewers. Let's move on.
Can't wait to see that in 10 months, or will we? All right. Let's talk about the Orioles. They are projected by FanGraphs to win 83 games, 18% to win the division, 48% to make the postseason. Last year, their over-under was 90.5. We both took the over, and we squeaked it out. We were very confident a year ago. We were like, Orioles are going to be awesome. Are you kidding me? Like, they're going to be there. They're cruising over 90.5.
They got Corbin Burns.
They eked it out. They eked it out, 91 wins. They couldn't quite keep up with the Yankees. And once again, this postseason was, it wasn't quite as embarrassing as the Rangers series.
It was worse.
In some ways, it was worse, I would say.
It was worse. It was worse just because Corbin Burns existed. And he delivered exactly what they asked him to do.
Yeah.
Corbin Burns was acquired to be amazing in a playoff game. He was amazing in a playoff game. The O's just lost it anyway. And so in my opinion, it was worse. In your memory, Jordan, how many games, maybe you have it up in front of you, how many games did the Yankees win the division by last year of the Orioles? Do you remember?
It was.
I'm curious what your brain thinks it was.
I mean, they were still fighting for it in this, at least the third to last week. So I think they won by like three games. Okay, yeah.
Three games. And when I for me, it was more than that. When I like, even though the Orioles were close, it just felt pretty quickly over the summer. It was, the Yankees are probably going to win this division.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's valid. And even in September, it was like, even though you would look at the numbers and be like, they're not that far behind, like at no point did I really think they were going to actually pass them. But even still, because of Burns, like, I think there were people that still had optimism they could make a push in October, and the Royals had other plans. So they lost again. They have now obviously lost 5-10 playoff games in a row, or more than
10. They have lost 10 consecutive playoff games dating back to the 2014 ALCS. They were swept by the Royals in that ALCS. They're the new Twins. They lost the wild card game to the Blue Jays. That's 5. They lost 3 against the Rangers in 23. 2 last year. That's 10. They are on an L10 in October. Can they break the schneid? What did they do to get better over the offseason? Weird winter, just a weird winter. Anthony Santander and Corbin Burns leave. That is the home run leader and the ace. They spent a good chunk of change. I believe the payroll went from like 93 mil to 160. Largest year-over-year percentage increase in the sport. New ownership led by David Rubenstein invested coin. However, there are questions, skepticism, concern around the game about how they chose to spend that money. Adding Tyler O'Neill on a 3-year deal that includes an opt-out, the muscled-out left fielder. Tomoyuki Sugano, a 35-year-old Japanese soft tosser. Charlie Morton, who is 41?
41, yeah.
Not younger than me. And Gary Sanchez to be the backup catcher, sure. Ramon Laureano, I've talked myself into that one. He's just like a hard-nosed, red-ass, angry reserve outfielder is kind of good. And then Andrew Kittredge, they gave him $10 million and he's going to be just out for a while. Just a bad kind of situation there. Who's on this team though? Behind the dish, it'll be Adley Rutschman looking to rejuvenate himself after a horrendous second half. Ryan Mountcastle at first base with some Ryan O'Hearn. Second base, Jackson Holliday in year number two. Jordan Westberg at third base, one of the more underrated players in the game. Gunnar Henderson at short. An outfield of Tyler O'Neill, Cedric Mullins, and Colton Cowser. Probably see some Heston Kjerstad in there too, in addition to Ramon Laureano. And then O'Hearn will DH, Mountcastle will DH, Kobe Mayo might DH. It'll be something of a rotating cast of characters. But the real concern here is with the starting pitching. Grayson Rodriguez, who was supposed to lead the line, he went down with a triceps issue with some discomfort in the back of his elbow during spring training after topping out at 89 in a spring training outing. Not great. The Orioles are doing a no-throw, wait-and-see approach, but it certainly smells like the beginning of a long layoff for one of the more talented young pitchers in baseball. His return date is TBD. That means Zach Eflin, who is way better than you remember, will start on opening day for the Orioles, and he'll be backed up by Charlie Morton, by Sugano, by Dean Kremer, America's four starter, just admirably fine. Shouts out to Dean Kremer. And Cade Povich, a young lefty who I am actually pretty excited about. At some point, Kyle Bradish, who finished top five in the Cy Young in 2023, will return to the fold. In the bullpen, Felix Bautista is back. The Mountain, one of the most dominant relief seasons in recent history in 2023, blew out his elbow, missed all last year. The velo is not all the way back in spring training. He's still going to be a very effective and impactful reliever. We believe in this offense, but the one big question here, can the Baltimore Orioles collect enough outs?
Yeah. So, you know, we just talked about concerns with Toronto. Obviously, when you have an offense like Baltimore projects to have, you have more margin of error. You can outscore a lot of teams. But they did not make a trade like they did a year ago for Corbin Burnes. They decided to go in the other direction, which the thing is now is we're not even like, okay, let's say they get to the postseason again. Great. Zach Eflin was like pretty good in that second game against Kansas City, but, and you would feel like you'd feel pretty good about Zach Eflin starting a postseason game. Sure. But more in a game two than a game one. I think that's probably safe to say.
Charlie Morton, you feel better more in a game three than a game two?
Sure. Yeah.
You know,
Charlie Morton. I mean, these are guys that it feels like best case scenario are getting you through the season. They are not. This doesn't look like a division winning staff. Right. It looks like a team that they might be able to throw enough innings, cover enough innings, eat enough innings to where the offense can be, as it was last year, top five in baseball. Now, replacing Santander is no small thing, but there's also reasons that you can look at this team and say, wait a minute, they still could be a top five offense in baseball again if you project forward with Holliday, if you don't have injuries to Westberg, if you have some bounce back from Adley Rutschman. I guess I was going to bring this up for key player, but let's just mention this too. The wall is a lot closer, Jake Mintz. How does the elimination of Baltimore impact this Orioles offense? But let me also say, how does it impact the pitching? Is Sugano going to allow 45 home runs because the ball is not, you know, landing in Tyler O'Neill's glove 390 feet away in front of this giant wall and left? That is an interesting combination where they decide as an organization, okay, we overcorrected, we pushed the wall back too far and made it too high. But now with the pitching staff they have, it's like, oh, I maybe would have felt a little bit better.
Would have
felt a little bit better if it was a little bit farther back. So all of those factors combining makes me concerned that they will be collecting enough outs. But I still think this offense is going to be pretty good.
Yeah, don't get it twisted, friends. Gunnar Henderson.
Yeah, pretty good. Can we talk about him?
We should probably mention took the leap. And it was overshadowed by Bobby Witt taking the leap at the same time and being like 3% better than Gunnar Henderson. Gunnar Henderson could be the sixth best player in the world. Like,
yeah,
he not only emerged as an offensive force, but he just figured out how to be good at shortstop too.
Yeah. And again, which is not an insignificant Bobby. Thing.
Yeah.
not an insignificant thing, but it is important more because Bobby Witt, there was never really concern he was going to play shortstop. Gunner, it was like, oh, is he going to be a third baseman? He's like, no, I'm a shortstop now.
Like, he's 6'3", 220. He's a big boy,
and he's,
right?
Like, he's huge. He's huge, right? And he, but he stole 20 bases instead of 40, and he's not quite as you know, eye-poppingly fast, even though he is well above average speed. But just the overall offensive game here is tremendous. I mean, it's yeah. It was, I mean, 37 home runs as a 23-year-old shortstop is outrageous.
Yeah, Gunner freaking rips.
Maybe it's 40 this year with Baltimore. Maybe he's going up more now. You know, like, why not? Like,
let's see it. My key player though is going to be Adley Rutschman, who all-star first half, everything was tracking fine, looked exhausted down the stretch. The biggest concern being his splits for his offensive numbers when he's catching and when he's DHing. So like when he was catching, he was just terrible, like straight up awful, like really horrible. A little bit better when he's DHing. He DH'd in game one of the playoffs. Okay. That to me tells that's a problem. I don't care how you got there or the reason behind it and James McCann, like being Corbin Burns, that's all great. Adley Rutschman should be catching game one of a postseason series. If you want Adley Rutschman to be JT Realmuto, who catches every game, every game of every postseason series, like we need to fix the process to get to that end result. I'm optimistic generally about Adley. I think he looks a lot better. I like he made some changes to his swing with his hands. I think moving the fence in is going to help him from the right side of the plate. I'm bullish on Rutschman, but boy, he needs to have a bounce back season.
Yeah, 100%. I think that you see a move like that and or a sequence like that where he's not the starting catcher in the first game of the postseason series. And it's like, that is something that you would either want to see like 8 years from now when he's already had, you know, years and years and years worn down, and or as a hitter, it's like, okay, let's get the best version of him as a hitter. And so you've earned your way to be, now that you're one of the best hitters on our team, fine. We can afford to have you at DH and then we can figure it out because that is going to help our team more. But right now, this version of Adley, who's still 26, 27 years old, like he needs to be the catcher. That's
every day.
This whole thing is built around him being the catcher. Again, he did it extremely well as a rookie and in his second year. We're trending in the wrong direction. This is still a generational talent that we should not forget still has generational talent, I have no doubt. But how he's able to balance those responsibilities, he clearly struggled in that respect last year, and you would hope that we can get a little bit more progress in the right direction this year.
And I guarantee you, Adley Rutschman does not want to be DHing in playoff games, right?
No, right. I'm sure he won't, right. I'm sure he views him as the catcher. That's why you take the catcher first overall.
The other key player here is Felix Bautista. He just changes the way that their manager, Brandon Hyde, can use the bullpen. He shortens the game when he's right. He's lingering, lurking at the back of the game, just ready to steal your soul. What type of Bautista do we get? When do we get it? Is very important to the season. The over-under for these birds, Jordan, is 87.5.
Slight under for me, and probably going to have them missing the postseason barely. Again, it's similar concerns on the mound. I just think that this is a group that I'm just not sure it's a group that's going to allow for too many like long winning streaks. Like that's kind of the way I'm looking at it. I think this offense should still be really good, but the bullpen, it's a lot of asking for Bautista. I mean, even an 80% of him is going to be an improvement on last year where they were 23rd in bullpen ERA. But there are still some pretty volatile pieces in here, like Sir Anthony. Cano's generally been good, but like Soto, like I love those guys when they're right, but you still have, even though we're past Craig Kimbrell, you still have some messy innings on the board with some of these guys in the bullpen. And when you consider that, I think that some of these starters are just going to have non-competitive outings every once in a while in this division. And at this, that's my concern. So I still trust the infrastructure. And I think that I like guys like Chase McDermott. I mean, they have some of these other, I know he's injured right now too. Like maybe I'm underrating some of the depth they have at just below the surface, but it still seems a little bit low for me. And so 87.5 is a great line.
Perfect line.
To me, it's 85 to 88. And I'm seeing them right on the outside looking in.
I'm going to say over.
Okay.
Barely. Mm-hmm. Barely. I don't know if I'm picking them to make the playoffs. Last year. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we'll figure that out at the end of our AL preview. And allow me to also just say the name, Samuel Bisaccia. Relevant to our conversation, if he is just like a Rafael Devers as a catcher, like that is super fun. And I don't know where that is going to work, but I don't care. I just want to see him hit. So we'll see if that's, it could just be replacing Ryan O'Hearn, right? It could be,
right.
I don't know. But anyway,
the other thing,
just wanted to mention him.
Like Jackson Holliday could just be a 5-in player, right? There are a lot of guys here who are kind of like lurking. Kobe Mayo, yeah. Heston Kerstad, highly touted prospects who haven't gotten the run yet.
Yeah.
And those guys could break out in the way that we saw, you know, Gunnar 2 years ago or Jordan Westberg in the first half of last year.
Yeah. And I made that point about them last season. Like they were a top five offense and it was zero from Jackson Holliday, right? Zero. So, I mean, if anything, he was actively harming their offense. He was the one guy that was making it worse. So if you even get an average version of him, it's going to be one of the best lineups in baseball for sure.
Let's take a break here. And when we get back, we'll talk about two teams that people are finally starting to learn more about. Welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Minster and Schusterman. Let's talk about the best rivalry in the sport, Rays Jays. Now, Boston Red Sox, New York Yankees, let's hop in. The Boston Red Sox are projected to win 85 games. Their division odds are 24%, playoff odds 57%. What'd they do last year? The over-under was 77.5. Jake and Jordan took the under, and we were wrong. They won 81 games. That means they also lost 81 games. Had a Netflix crew following them around all season long, and nothing happened besides a Jaren Duran slur. So over the winter, they decided to upgrade things a little bit, trading for Garrett Crochet from the other Sox to be the ace. They signed Alex Bregman late in the proceedings on a short-term chunky deal with opt-outs. Also brought in Walker Buehler, and I totally forgot about this one until I went to Red Sox camp last week. Aroldis Chapman is on that team. I was like, whoa.
That was their first move. That was like their first move of the winter.
I just had totally forgot about it. Who is on this team? Behind the dish, Connor Wong. More on him later. Let's pause now. Putting all of the Red Sox position players into specific positions is not exactly an easy endeavor. And so, let me say that again. Not exactly an easy endeavors. Nailed it. 10 points to Gryffindor. Ooh, but we're going to do our best. Here we go. First base, Tristan Casas. I feel pretty good about that. Okay, I feel pretty good about that. Second base. My guess is on opening dia, it is going to be David Hamilton, University of Texas legend at the Keystone. Mm-hmm. Third base, Alex Bregman. Shortstop, Trevor Story. Designated hitter, Rafael Devers. With an outfield of Sedan Rafaela in center. Boy, I really don't think he can hit, but they're going to give him every opportunity to do it because they extended him. Jaren Duran in left. And Will Urabreu and Rob Refsnyder platooning up a storm in right field. With Masataka Yoshida, who I think is going to be hurt to start the year, he exists as well. Who else exists is the three of the best prospects in baseball, Roman Anthony, Christian Campbell, and Marcelo Meyer, all of whom in storybook fashion went yard during their spring breakout game. One of those God is real moments in baseball that we talk about, me and you, like the D. Gordon home run. You know,
yeah, they rigged it up real nice. MLB pipeline was absolutely going crazy. That's as good as it gets, man. Those three. We'll talk about them in a little bit.
Starting rotation, fascinating group. Garrett Crochet steps in. He's going to start an opening day. Tanner Houck, better than you think last year, worse than the final numbers. Weird second half for him, I believe. Walker Buehler comes in, who made $5 million by being awesome in the playoffs, but was sneaky stinky during the regular season in 2024. Lucas Giolito, supposed to be back. He's dealing with a hamstring issue. Cutter Crawford and Brian Bayo are also shelved right now to start the year, and that's going to put Richard Fitz, a.k.a. Dick Fitz, and Quinn Priester in the rotation to start the season. Bullpen, bizarre group as well. Liam Hendricks, who missed basically the last two seasons, is going to start as the closer, it seems, with Aroldis Chapman, Justin Slayton, and Garrett Whitlock backing him up. Fascinating group. And the one big question is, how does all the positional alignment drama work itself out? Jordan, before we answer that question, let's explain it. What is the drama? How did we get where we are now?
So when the Red Sox were pursuing Alex Bregman as late back as like the winter meetings, when Alex Cora was starting to be asked about this, Alex Cora was very open and being like, yeah, like, love Alex Bregman, obviously had him in Houston, he's a winner, blah, all these things. And he's like, yeah, I always viewed him as like he could be as like an up the middle player. Like he could be a second baseman. And second base was an area where it was like, oh, yes, they have these prospects coming. We can talk about them in a second. But it was like, if Alex Bregman's willing to play second, which was part of the reporting, like that fit in Boston is pretty awesome. You know, like that is pretty, pretty good. Then they finally signed him and it's like, oh, that this is incredible. This is what a lineup. You got Bregman and Devers and, you know, Yoshida is still DHing and you're still paying him a lot of money. So Yoshida will stay as the DH, but you still have Casas and then Devers can stay at third where he's worked really hard to be okay. And he's never played anywhere else, right? And Bregman's willing to play second. So what's the problem? Well, this spring, Alex Bregman has played zero games at second base and Rafael Devers took a long time to even play in spring training at all and has, I think, only DH'd so far. I saw Devers quote that said he hadn't picked up a bat in like months before he showed up, which speaks to how awesome this dude is, by the way. Obviously, he's been one of my favorite players since he got there, but like all these other guys that are probably taking swings with like motion capture stuff like 500 times over the winter, Rafi's chilling, shows up, and he's like, boom, all right, now I'm ready to hit. That's what you can do when you're Rafi Devers. Rafael Devers has made it clear, like, I would like to stay at third base. All the quotes recently have been very, very mysterious almost. Like they keep asking Devers, be like, what do you want to do? And he's like, I told them it's private. And everyone's like, okay, well, that means he wants to play third. But he's also like, I'll do whatever it takes to win.
I told him, buddy, it's not private. It's not private.
First of all,
very little of this is private. Okay.
For sure.
You're
for
entitled sure. to an element of privacy as a professional athlete, obviously, yes.
For sure.
But when you're making that much money, it's actually not private.
Yeah.
And when you roll out there on opening day, like we will know. We will see the lineup.
Yes.
It is not private.
Well, and this is the other tension here is that it does seem like based on everything that Alex Cora has said publicly, where he said like, yeah, you give Rafael Devers that contract, like he's the third baseman. Like that's the point, right?
Yeah.
But it seems like the front office is like Alex Bregman just won a gold glove. Obviously, having him at third base makes our team better than if Rafael Devers is at third and Bregman is at second. All of which is to say, I don't know how this is going to shake out. I think the fact that Yoshida is not healthy right now, maybe, I don't know if that makes it better or worse. It makes it easier or harder to make this decision.
Makes it easier.
But again,
because he doesn't exist in the lineup.
Because sure, and in that sense, but you're still having to convince Devers to play to DH. I don't know.
It's not a convincing. It's not convincing.
He doesn't have a choice. So you're saying, okay, so, right. So that what we'll see is, so it sounds like what's going to happen is Bregman's going to play third and Devers is going to DH. I don't know what happens when Yoshida gets back. It's a very expensive bench player, but that's fine. Again, you'd rather just have more good players and then figure it out. And that's clearly the approach that they've decided to take is they realize that Bregman wants to be on the Red Sox and they realize that they still had money that they hadn't spent yet. And they said, we'll figure it out once everybody gets to camp. It is just kind of amazing that we still don't really have clarity of this by March 16th. And whether that's a good or a bad thing, I don't know if this is what's going to sink their season. But, you know, it will be interesting if Devers can't, I mean, yes, he's going to have to DH if they make him. If Devers struggles offensively as a DH, like that will be interesting because that's not something he's ever had to deal with. And that is a thing that some players deal with over time. Some players can handle it, some players can't. But it's something to watch is how this works out. Not to mention if Christian Campbell has a 1,000 OPS in the minors or Roman Anthony has a 1,000 OPS in the minors, like how they start get folding in as well.
That to me is the most interesting component because they have these three awesome prospects, all of whom are in AAA, all of whom on a certain roster would be in the big leagues right now. If there was a gaping
hole,
Meyer less so, but if there was a gaping hole at second base, like Campbell would be there. Now, the one thing I'll say about Campbell, talking to scouts and evaluators, his defensive versatility is less of an asset and more of like a, this guy's not a good defender anywhere right now, right? Where he should either be at second base or left field. Whereas Anthony is like a going to be a good defensive corner outfielder. Finding a space for these guys, I don't see how they do that. Now, someone will get hurt. Someone will be bad. And it is always better to have more good baseball players than fewer ones. And the pieces tend to just fall as they may. The fact that there's no Netflix crew this year, that's a bummer. Because this is the type of situation that does lead to legitimate discord between teammates about who's getting playing time and who's not. And I think Alex Cora is well equipped to handle that type of environment because he is one of the managers who I'm very confident is actively good at his job. And so I think he'll make the pieces fit. I'm just fascinated. Like, what is the starting lineup if in their first postseason game? Like, it could be 70 different things. Whereas a lot of competitive teams right now, if it goes well, there's like one way it goes well. If that makes sense. Like the Yankees, Judge has to hit and all the veterans who are there have to hit too, right? Like, that's a fact. For the Red Sox, it could just, there are so many different choose your own adventure stories here. And so that's, I think, why I'm so compelled by them. But for me, my key player here is Connor Wong, their catcher. And that's just because it is a massive weak link for this team. Particularly because most competitive clubs nowadays are prioritizing defense and pitching staff therapy and framing for their catchers. And the Red Sox don't really have a guy like that. Connor Wong's defensive numbers, particularly with framing, were pretty bad last year. He's a decent thrower, which is good now that people are stealing more. But he doesn't fit the mold of somebody who is actively making every pitcher better all the time. Whereas that is the case for the many of these teams. Have a guy who they at least thinks, they at least think is doing that. Is Connor Wong that guy? Can he develop? Can he add that? Maybe. But I'm fascinated that catcher was an area they decided not to upgrade.
Yeah, I think the two other things that make Connor Wong compelling as a character, which again, if you're thinking like, really, we're talking about Connor Wong,
he's got a catch
of all these other famous baseball players. But yeah, if you are part of, you know, trusting that your whole pitching staff is going to be good is trusting your catcher. And the one thing you give Connor Wong credit for is that he has been there for a few years now. So the guys that have been homegrown, like Houck and Crawford, like, yes, obviously, I'm sure he's in Bayo, like very familiar with those guys. But how he works with Crochet and Buehler and all those things is interesting. And then it's the other obvious thing, man. Like, this dude was in the Mookie trade. I know we don't, Red Sox fans don't want to keep hearing about this, and that's fine, but that is still a part of this team. He's a really important part of the Red Sox from the Mookie trade. That is indisputable, whether he's good or not. And yes, he had an above average OPS last year, although if you look at his underlying offensive stuff, you would be shocked that it was ever that good. So he's really important. And then, yeah, I mean, I know they traded for some catching depth, but ultimately we thought it was going to be Kyle Teal, and I'm not blaming them for trading him to get Garrett Crochet, but it does put that position in a bit of an interesting position. Now, speaking of Garrett Crochet, I will put him as my key player just because, man, you know, a year ago, the White Sox say, we're this guy's our open day starter, and we're all like, this is ridiculous. I mean, what are we doing? This guy's, okay, White Sox, sure, you're going to suck, and maybe Garrett Crochet will be something. Hey, maybe that's Sean Burke this year. More on that later this week. But Garrett Crochet proves us all wrong. One of the best pitchers in baseball. But, you know, it was 130 innings. And now, especially with guys already injured, it makes every Crochet start all the more important, and you hope that at some point by midsummer, this is a strong rotation depth-wise as well as at the top, but you paid a heavy price for him, and I'm glad they did. I commend them to it. This is why you build up your farm system, is so you could make trades like this, but now it's on him to really do it on a team that's not one of the worst in baseball history. So every Crochet start is going to be a pretty big deal, and then the other thing is can they extend him? by all accounts, he wants to be there and wants to get an extension. I assume they're going to get that done. I'm fascinated what that deal ends up looking like. And if they don't, for some reason, then it becomes all the more interesting, because it really seemed like that would be something that was already part of the plan at this point. And the fact that they haven't done that yet is a little bit surprising.
Over, the under. Over, yeah. Under. Over, under. 86.5.
Over.
Over.
As we were about to talk about our concerns with the New York Yankees, I am going to pick the Red Sox to win this division.
Oh.
Then I guess over. I am sold. Maybe I am buying into the hype too much of them and the Cubs. One of those teams is going to not do what they're supposed to, but I'm picking both of them to win the division, and I'm prepared to look foolish. I'm prepared to look like a total sucker, but I do think they have amassed enough talent. I do think that they have enough depth on both sides of the ball. Honestly, I do think that they've made strides on the pitching side of things, that I feel like that they are going to be in a decent spot here. I don't love every move that they made. I'm a little worried about Bueller. I love Crochet. I hope our friend Lucas can actually pitch at some point and pitch well. But I think this should also be one of the best lineups in baseball. And I think that they have the pitching to win a division that is maybe shaky because of what's going on with the Yankees.
The last time I went to a Red Sox playoff game, I got COVID. And I hope that I don't get COVID this time around. The last team we'll talk about in the division is the New York Yankees. All of whom have beards now. Their projected record is beardy beard and beard. No, they're 86-76 is their projected record. 31% division odds, 63% playoff odds. Last year, what did they do? Over under 93.5. I took the over. You took the under. They won 94 games and you could suck it.
Oh, that hurts. That hurts. I said slide under. They went slide over. You are the person living minutes from Yankee Stadium.
I knew.
You had a feeling. You knew that they were just barely going over. What else happened last year? They won the division. And then they got past the Royals. And they got past the Guardians. I was there for that. I was actually just in downtown Cleveland the other day. And I was thinking like, oh, I'm excited to be at Progressive Field. And I was like, huh, what was the last time I was here? Oh, right. Juan Soto sending the Yankees to the World Series. That was the coolest thing of all time.
I am fascinated how the Yankees are going to commemorate last season, this season. Because then, obviously, things go sideways in historic fashion in the World Series. As Nestor Cortez reminds us, they could have won Game 1, and they could have won Game 5, and they did win Game 4. So that's 3-2. And you just need one more win at that point. Do they show the Soto homer? Because like that is the moment where if he was still on the team, right? If he's still on the team, they're showing the Soto to the World Series homer 1,000 times. It's in 100%. Every montage, right?
Do you pretend like he was never there? Like, I don't know.
It's going to be a lot of reactions at the dugout. And the other funny thing is every other uplifting postseason moment was courtesy of Giancarlo Stanton, who might not play a single game. So it's just a very bizarre situation. What happened over the winter? Soto is on the Mets, and the Dodgers spent more money than God, leaving the Yankees the third potato in the bag of baseball potatoes. They then went on the great NYC pivot, signing Max Fried and Paul Goldschmidt, trading for Cody Bellinger and Devin Williams, bringing back Tim Hill and Jonathan Loaisiga while letting Clay Holmes go to the Mets, where he immediately looks like an impact starter. Yankees, like, why didn't we figure this out? Like, I need to ask around about that. I'm fascinated. Why did the Mets have this idea and not the Yankees? Who is on this team? Behind the dish, the hirsute Austin Wells, who has continued to shave even though he doesn't need to anymore. He will be backed up by you and me. At first base, it is Paul Goldschmidt, who is 37. He won the 2022 NL MVP. And he looks like a good Yankee. He looks very Yankee to me. We'll see how it goes. Second base, Jazz Chisholm Jr. He was so good in the second half for them. 130 OPS plus. What is Jazz this year? We'll talk about it. Third base. It was supposed to be DJ LeMahieu, but guess what? He got hurt. I can't believe it. So it'll be Oswaldo Cabrera on opening day. Anthony Volpe, the pride of Wachung, will be the starting shortstop every day. Left field, Jason Dominguez, two S's, no problems. Cody Bellinger in center. Aaron Judge in right. DH, Ben Rice until Giancarlo and his tennis elbows are back. The starting rotation, Max Fried, Carlos Rodon, Marcus Stroman, Clark Schmidt, Will Warren, Luis Hill when he's back from his lat. Not Gerrit Cole. Bullpen, Devin Williams, Luke Weaver, Ian Hamilton, Fernando Cruz, Tim Hill. Those are the Yankees. Aaron Boone is their manager. One big question.
Sure is.
Who is the second best hitter on this team and how good are they?
That is a good one. That is maybe related to my key players, which we can get to. Guys like Bellinger, guys like Goldschmidt. Really, really counting on those guys. I mean, Giancarlo, again, you mentioned what are the lasting memories of the postseason. It's these clutch moments. But, you know, in the team last year, I mean, how many games did he play in the regular season? He played...
A lot.
Yeah, but... You know, 115,
can I guess?
Yeah.
100 and... I'll say 131 games.
That's too high. 114. But... But here, okay, but to that point, though, do you know who the third best hitter was last year behind Soto and Judge?
Gleyber Torres.
By OPS Plus. I mean, technically it was Giancarlo if you grant him, you know, that much. But yes, Gleyber and then Austin Wells were both around 100. Gleyber was 101 and Gleyber 103. To me, I think that is a good, big question. But to me, it's just, and I know some of these guys are still in the organization because they're just injured. The degree to which this team is different from the one we just watched to go to the World Series is astonishing. I mean, what's the same? Austin Wells is catching. Volpe is at short. That's
Aaron Judge
Carlos.
Is in the outfield.
Aaron Judge is in the outfield, but he's not in center. And Jazz Chisholm is in the infield, but he's not a third. And Jason Dominguez is playing, right? I guess, maybe. He wasn't playing last year. Cabrera is now starting instead of these things. Max Fried is now on this team and was not on this team. The bullpen is not, you know, Luke Weaver is there, but he's not the closer anymore. It's just so much that's different.
Clark Schmidt, three starter though.
Yeah, hopefully his shoulder's okay. Shoulder doesn't sound good. Hopefully he's fine. You know, Luis Hill, rookie of the year, he'll be out for the first few months. It's just so many different pieces or guys moving around. Maybe it's a good, okay, but we joke about it as a pivot in the context of Soto, but it was so much else. There was so much about this roster that needed to change because of guys that were leaving, and in those cases it might be a good thing, right? No more Verdugo, no more Rizzo, whatever, but it's still just an amazing team. To normally the teams that get that far, you kind of know what you're going to get the next year, and it's the opposite.
When is the last time two everyday starters for a World Series team just disappeared the following season? Like, are Alex Verdugo and Anthony Rizzo going to play another baseball game? I have absolutely no idea. We have heard freaking nothing from them. Anthony Rizzo is like a top 20 iconic player of the 21st century in terms of his cultural impact and leading the Cubs to a World Series. And Verdugo is 28.
Yeah.
And they're...
Doesn't...
Combined plate appearances this season... Rizzo, Verdugo, big league plate appearances this season, over under 230.
And remember, folks, they got 1,000 for the Yankees last year. All right. So those are reasons for optimism. Let's get to our key
players.
That's
a good thing, dude.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. Let's get to our key players. I'm just going to go right, basically off of that. Yes. Okay. Oh, you have to play Soto in the outfield. Are we counting that as Bellinger or Dominguez? Or are we counting them as replacing Verdugo? Whatever. Bellinger and Goldschmidt is just massive. Counting on Cody Bellinger to fit in seamlessly. He's finally a Yankee. His dad was a Yankee. He'll fit perfect in this ballpark. He can play all these different positions if we need him to. Okay, maybe he ends up at first if Paul Goldschmidt stinks, right? Like, there's a lot of different ways. Maybe he ends up back in left. Like, Bellinger, how he ends up moving around, how his bat translates to Yankee Stadium. And then Paul Goldschmidt, who, again, we've seen the Yankees bring in former MVPs in their mid-30s, and it hasn't always worked out. I don't, he looked better in the second half last year, but this is still a guy who it turns 38 in September, and it doesn't look like an impact player anymore. Now, again, Rizzo was, respectfully, horrible. Certainly by the end of the season, it was not pretty. So if Paul Goldschmidt can be average, that's probably an upgrade. But there's also a version where he starts trending to look like Anthony Rizzo did, and now you have the same problem all over again.
Yankees fans, losing it, Juan Soto is a big deal. Okay? Now, I know you might not know that. I'm just kidding. Of course you know that. But it's a big deal. Last year, the rest of the lineup besides Judge and Soto was pretty forgettable. I mean, it was average at best. And so now you're counting on the average at best to fill in for Soto. I do think it's possible. And I'll paint the rosy picture here for you, okay? And I'll say my key guy here is Jazz. Jazz, after coming over, was like a 130 OPS plus guy. If he's that over a full season, I mean, he's a superstar, right? That's a huge deal. I think I'm buying Volpe 2025. Sure. I'm buying Volpe All-Star Game. He's hitting the ball even harder. I think we've kind of underrated how solid he's been, in part because of what Henderson and Bobby Witt have been. Look, is he a good hitter? Yeah. Has he been a good hitter? No, he is not.
No.
But he's providing well above average value because of his defense and his wheels, and he's doing enough. And I think that development is not always linear, and I will remain optimistic on Volpe. Jason Dominguez is a highly touted prospect who is just a total mystery box. And by box, I mean box because he's shaped like a frickin' box. All right? He's also has the defensive wherewithal of a box, it seems, in left field, where he has not looked any better. Now, he could be an impact bat, for sure. That would not be shocking if Jason Dominguez was a 120 OPS plus guy. I don't think we would be floored by that. So there are ifs here, and this is going to connect us all the way back to the Jays. Right? Back to the Jays.
What a journey. This podcast.
This is what gives me a little pause, is the ifs that this team is relying upon on the offensive side. Yes, losing Gerrit Cole is a bad thing. I have so much faith in the pitching development and the run prevention apparatus here is just going to uncover and suck up outs. They have done that for a long time. They did it in the first half of last year when Gerrit Cole went down. The rotation was good. I think Will Warren is going to be pretty good. I like this group. I'm not that worried. I'm worried a little about the offense, particularly if some injuries happen. There's not a great second level here of offensive depth. And so and here's the other thing. Is Aaron Judge going to bang like he's done? Probably. If Aaron Judge is 15% worse than he was last year and finishes fourth in the MVP, that wouldn't be a catastrophe, except it would be, because the whole operation of the New York Yankees seems to be counting on Aaron Judge to be generational every year. Now, guess what? He's been generational the last 4 years. And he will probably be generational this season. But that's a wild thing to rest the whole thing on, right?
He 2023, when he only played 106 games, and yes, his OPS was over 1,000, but he missed, 60 games. They won 82 games. So I don't know. Okay, so over under is 89.5.
I'm doing the opposite. I'm just letting you know right now.
Okay. So
I'm zagging you.
That's fine. So whatever. So I'm going under.
Oh, I'm going to still pick easy over then for me.
Okay. So I'm still going to pick them to make the playoffs in one of the wild cards, because I do respect the pitching apparatus and think the bullpen could be pretty freaking sweet. And I do think that this could be an above average pitching staff. And because I do believe in Jazz, because I do have a good amount of optimism with Bellinger, if not necessarily Goldschmidt. I'm also with Volpe and Wells. I see enough here with God level Aaron Judge that this should still be a good baseball team that will find its way into the postseason. But it would have been nice to put a more compelling effort together, which I guess Nestor believes they did for last year, because that might have been the closest they get here for a while. So we'll see.
Making zero effort to sign Alex Bregman is a fascinating decision because he fits into this team so well, and they needed a third baseman, and their biggest rivals in Boston now have two who are fighting with each other, and like the Yankees have zero. Another key guy here I think we need to mention is Austin Wells, because the backup options behind him are really sparse, and he was shouldering so much of the load last year as a rookie and was exhausted by the end of the year. Monitoring his innings and his energy to make sure that he's good down the stretch is important, and that means you don't get to play Austin Wells. And if Austin Wells gets hurt, there's a big issue here. I'm still going to take – what did you take?
I'm going under. I'm okay, going
well,
like
I'm still
going to
obviously take the over. Okay, I'm taking the over here.
It sounds like you feel great about that.
Yeah, I'm going to take the over. I will say, though, this could be the team that finishes under 500. The Yankees have not finished under 500 since 1992, I believe.
So close in 23.
They were 82 and 80 in 23.
We were so sure they were going there in 23, but they've kept the streak alive.
Yeah, there are levers here that could go that direction.
100%. It's the trap doors are there. And I will finish with this. With the theme of how different this team is, it is amazing that the one player that everyone assumed would be gone is still here. Marcus Stroman survives. He will probably throw another 150 innings for them, or some amount for them if they can find a way to trade him. And now he's important. Sorry,
what
Yankees
did I
fans.
Say?
You're gonna you, yeah.
I, what did I say when we were talking Stroman? Right? We poo-pooed. I 100%. Mean, Jake and Jordan all over this one, baby. We poo-pooed the "I'm a starter" thing because the odds of one of the Yankee starters going down before opening day was so high, and Marcus Stroman, yes, and like Marcus Stroman, it just made sense. And so I think it's a good thing that he was like, "I'm a starter. I'm a starter." If he goes out there and he's like an all-star level pitcher, dude, they're going to be wearing "I'm a starter" t-shirts.
That's great. They will. The path is there for that, but is going to require some strong performance and production from Ben Rice and all these other Yankees. It's a very different Yankees team, but we'll see how it goes.
Rank this division. Let's start at the bottom. I'm putting Jays 5.
Oh, we're starting at the bottom. Jays 5. I think we're going to have the same order, aren't we?
Good.
Maybe. I'm going from the top. Sox, Yanks, Rays, Orioles, Jays. I might end up picking the Rays ahead of the Yankees the more we talk. I might have the Rays as my top wild card. Yeah, you know what? I'm switching. I'm going to change it right now on our predictions. Oh. Rays going to be above the Yankees. Okay, Sox, Rays, Yankees, Orioles, Blue Jays.
I'll stick with your original one and say Sox, Yanks, Rays, O's, Jays. Our show would be so much better and get so many more eyeballs if we just disagreed with each other more. You know, I hate
people
you.
Like us. I
hate
people
you.
I think people like that we get along. Let us know. BaseballBarbercast@gmail.com. Would you like to see us manufacture more disagreements? Give us some.
We can't. There are things.
We can try.
I think once a week we should try and find something in baseball we disagree on. Here's the problem, though. Like, you're really smart. And so if I say something and you're like, "Jake, that's not right," I'm like, "Well, it probably isn't right because Jordan knows what's up."
No. That's fine. It doesn't. We'll find some things that are a little bit more subjective that we can argue over. But season predictions, we don't have a lot of vindication with this stuff. So
long app, million things going on in baseball right now. Very busy week for the barbecue as Jordan hops on a plane tomorrow and heads to New York City to kick it with me and wake up early and watch baseball that will be happening in a day and a half. That's disjointing. Juan Soto. Shohei Ohtani homered in the Tokyo Dome. Pretty cool. A lot of stuff's going on over there. A college player did a shout out to Jeffrey Yan on the mound. That's great. There's 1,000 things to talk about. We're not going to talk about any of them right now. Thank you to Colin Brennan for producing. Yes, Jordan?
Yeah. No, thank you to Colin Brennan for producing. Our next podcast will talk about the Tokyo series
Oh, yeah.
And the AL Central. If Tokyo gives us enough, that might be its own episode. And AL Central will be Thursday. But we'll finish our season previews this week. And then, I mean, real opening day is almost here, guys. It's almost here. Oh, my gosh. Can't wait. Thank you, Jake, for doing this podcast with me. And I will see you IRL tomorrow. Thank you all for listening. Bye-bye.